So this is chapter 12, called The Mirror of Erised. Christmas is coming. One morning in mid-December, Hogwarts awoke to find itself covered in several feet of snow. The lake froze solid, and the Weasley twins were punished for bewitching several snowballs so they followed Quirrell around, bouncing off the back of his turban. The few owls that managed to battle their way through the stormy sky to deliver mail had to be nursed back to health by Hagrid before they could fly off again. No one could wait for the holidays to start. While the Gryffindor common room and the Great Hall had roaring fires, the drafty corridors had become icy and bitter wind rattled the windows in the classrooms. Worst of all was Professor Snape's classes down in the dungeons, where their breath rose in a mist before them, and they kept as close as possible to their hot cauldrons. "I do feel so sorry," said Draco Malfoy, while in Potions class, "for all those people who have to stay at Hogwarts for Christmas because they're not wanted at home." He was looking over at Harry as he spoke. Crabbe and Goyle chuckled. Harry was measuring out powdered spine of lionfish and ignored them. Malfoy had been even more unpleasant than usual since the Quidditch match. Disgusted that the Slytherins had lost, he tried to get everyone laughing at how a wide-mouthed tree frog would be replacing Harry as seeker next. Then he'd realized that nobody found this funny, because they were all so impressed by the way Harry had managed to stay on his bucking broomstick. So Malfoy, jealous and angry, had gone back to taunting Harry about having no family. God. It was true that Harry wasn't going back to Privet Drive for Christmas. Professor McGonagall had come around the week before making a list of students who would be staying for the holidays, and Harry had signed up at once. He didn't feel sorry for himself. This would probably be his best Christmas ever. He and Ron and his brothers were staying too, because Mr. and Mrs. Weasley were going to Romania to visit Charlie. When they left the dungeons at the end of Potions, they found a large fir tree blocking the corridor ahead. Two enormous feet sticking out at the bottom and a loud puffing sound told them that Hagrid was behind it. "Hi, Hagrid. Want any help?" Ron asked, sticking his head through the branches.
"Nah, I'm all right. Thanks, Ron."
"Would you mind moving out of the way?" came Malfoy's cold drawl behind them. "Are you trying to earn some extra money, Weasley? Hoping to be a gameskeeper yourself when you leave Hogwarts, I suppose. That hut of Hagrid's must seem like a palace compared to what your family's used to." Ron dived at Malfoy just as Snape came up the stairs. "Weasley!" Ron let go of the front of Malfoy's robes.
"He was provoked, Professor Snape," said Hagrid,
sticking his huge, hairy, ugly face out from behind the tree.
"Malfoy was insulting his family."
"Be that as it may, fighting is against the Hogwarts rules, Hagrid," said Snape silkily. "Weasley..." "Weasley, don't do it again. Move along, all of you." Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle pushed roughly past the tree, scattering needles everywhere and smirking. "I'll get him," said Ron, grinding his teeth at Malfoy's back. "One of these days, I'll get him." "I hate them both," said Harry, "Malfoy and Snape."
"Come on, cheer up, it's nearly Christmas," said Hagrid. "Tell you what, come with me and see the Great Hall. Looks a treat."
So the three of them followed Hagrid and his tree off to the Great Hall, where Professor McGonagall and Professor Flitwick were busy with the Christmas decorations. "Ah, Hagrid, the last tree, put in the far corner, would you?" The hall looked spectacular. Festoons of holly and mistletoe hung around the walls, and no fewer than 12 towering Christmas trees stood around the room, some sparkling with tiny icicles, some glittering with hundreds of candles.
"How many days have you got left till your holidays?" Hagrid asked.
"Just one," said Hermione. And that reminds... Wait, what was... Damn it. I keep losing Hermione's accent. Do you notice when I do Hermione's accent right? Mm-hmm. Okay. How does she go again? Yeah, yeah. "Just one," said Hermione. "And that reminds me. Harry, Ron, we've got half an hour before lunch. We should be in the library." Is that sort of right? That's a little...
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay, anyways. Oh, yeah, you're right, said Ron, tearing his eyes away from Professor Flitwick, who had golden bubbles blossoming out of his wand, as was trailing them all over the branches of the new tree.
The library, said Hagrid, following him out of the hall. Just before the holidays. Bit keen, aren't you?
Oh, we're not working, Harry told him brightly. Ever since you mentioned Nicholas Flamel, we've been trying to find out who he is.
You what? Hagrid looked shocked. Listen here. I've told you, drop it. It's nothing to you what that gog's guarding.
We just want to know who Nicholas Flamel is, that's all, said Hermione. Unless you'd like to tell us and save us the trouble, Harry added. We must have been through hundreds of books already, but you can't find him anywhere. Just give us a hint. I know we'll read his name somewhere.
I'm not saying nothing, said Hagrid flatly.
We'll just have to find him ourselves, then, said Ron, and they left Hagrid looking disgruntled and hurried off to the library. They had indeed been searching books for Flamel's name ever since Hagrid had let it slip. But how else were they going to find out what Snape was trying to steal? The trouble was, it was hard to know where to begin, not knowing what Flamel might have done himself to get himself into a book. He wasn't in Great Wand, the Wizards of the 20th Century, or Notable Magical Names of Our Time. He was missing, too, from an important modern magical discoveries and a study of recent developments in wizardry. And then, of course, there was the sheer size of the library. Tens of thousands of books, thousands of shelves, hundreds of narrow rows, and no one had invented Google yet. Hermione took out a list of subjects and titles. She had decided to search while Ron strode off down a row of books and started pulling them off the shelves at random. You know, actually, to be honest, why haven't the wizards come up with, like, a better system for searching? Can't she just go, like...
No, I thought of that too, like, come up the name, and then, like, we could go through all the books until it finds it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean...
No. Yeah. Anyway,
it is stupid. Okay. Harry wandered over to the restricted section. He'd been wondering for a while if Flamel wasn't in there somewhere. Unfortunately, you needed a special signed note from one of the teachers to look in any of the restricted books, and he knew he'd never get one. These were books containing powerful dark magic never taught at Hogwarts, and only read by older students studying advanced defense against the dark arts.
What are you looking for, boy?
Nothing, said Harry. Madame Pince, the librarian, brandished a feather duster at him.
You'd better get out, then. Go on, out!
Wishing he'd been a bit quicker at thinking up some story, Harry left the library. He, Ron, and Hermione all agreed that they better not ask Madame Pince where they could find Flamel. They were sure she'd be able to tell them, but they couldn't risk Snape hearing what they were up to. Harry waited outside the corridor to see if the other two had found anything, but he wasn't very hopeful. They had been looking for 2 weeks after A... What? After A? Yeah, but this doesn't make any sense. Yeah, but that doesn't seem like it's what she means. Well, let's just say, they'd been looking for 2 weeks, but as they only had odd moments between lessons, it wasn't surprising they'd found nothing. What they really needed was a nice long search without Madame Pince breathing down their necks. 5 minutes later, Ron and Hermione joined him, shaking their heads. They went off to lunch.
You will keep looking while I'm away, won't you? Said Hermione. And send me an owl. Oh, sorry. And do send me an owl if you find anything.
And then you could ask your parents if they know who Flamel is, said Ron. It'd be safe to ask them.
Very safe, as they're both dentists, said Hermione.
Once the holidays had started, Ron and Harry were having too good a time to think much about Flamel. They had the dormitory to themselves, and the common room was far emptier, so that they would be able to get good armchairs by the fire. They sat by the hour eating anything they could spear on a toasting fork, bread, English muffins, marshmallows, and plotting ways of getting Malfoy expelled, which were fun to talk about even if they wouldn't work. Ron also started teaching Harry wizard chess. It was exactly like Muggle chess, except the figures were alive, which made it a lot like directing troops in a battle. Then why do you have to teach him?
I know, I don't get it either.
That's silly.
Why are you, like, getting all poopy?
What's that? Okay. Sorry, should I not be asking so many questions?
No, there's, like, a funny, like, Just keep
going. Oh, okay. Ron's set was very old and battered. Like everything else he owned, it had once belonged to someone else in his family. In this case, his grandfather. However, the old chessmen weren't to draw at all. Ron knew them so well, he never had trouble getting them to do what he wanted. I guess it means that, like, not only is it like chess, but you also have to convince your pieces to do what they want.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Harry played with chessmen Seamus Finnegan had lent him, and they didn't trust him at all. He wasn't a very good player yet, and they kept shouting different bits of advice. Yeah, I guess this is it. Which was confusing. Don't send me there. Can't you see his knight? Send him. We can afford to lose him. Yeah, I guess you have to be convincing. That adds another dimension to chess. On Christmas Eve, Harry went to bed looking forward to the next day for the food and the fun, but not expecting any presents at all. When he woke early in the morning, however, the first thing he saw was a small pile of packages at the foot of his bed. Merry Christmas, said Ron sleepily as Harry scrambled out of bed and pulled on his bathrobe. You too, said Harry. Will you look at this? I've got some presents. Would you expect turnips? Said Ron, turning to his own pile, which was a lot bigger than Harry's. So, they're all Christians? Like, wizards? It's not clear.
I guess so.
This sort of confused me before. Like, why is there all the Christian imagery? Because, like, they're wizards. They do magic. That's like... And didn't, like, all the Christians... Like, the fundamentalists get mad at when the book came out because they were, like, teaching people to be wizards or something.
Yeah, but fundamentalists are stupid.
That's true, they are pretty stupid. But it's still confusing. I don't know why wizards are Christians exactly, but...
I've thought about it too, but let's move on.
All right. Harry picked up the top parcel. It was wrapped in thick brown paper. Scrawled across it was, "To Harry from Hagrid." Inside was a roughly cut wooden flute. Hagrid had obviously whittled it himself. Harry blew it. It sounded like an owl. A second, very small parcel contained a note. "We received your message and enclose your Christmas present from Uncle Vernon and Aunt Petunia." Taped to the note was a 50-pence piece. "That's friendly," said Harry. Ron was fascinated by the 50-pence. "Weird," he said. "What a shape. This is money?" "You can keep it," said Harry, laughing at how pleased Ron was. "Hagrid and my aunt and uncle. So who sent these?" "I think I know who that's from," said Ron, turning a bit pink and pointing to a very lumpy parcel. "My mom. I told her you didn't expect any presents, and..." "Oh no," he groaned. "She made you a Weasley sweater." Harry had torn open the parcel to find a thick, hand-knitted sweater in emerald green and a large box of homemade fudge. "Every year she makes us a sweater," said Ron, unwrapping his own, "and mine's always maroon." "That's really nice of her," said Harry, trying the fudge, which was very tasty. The next present also contained candy, a large box of chocolate frogs from Hermione. This left only one parcel. Harry picked it up and felt it. It was very light. He unwrapped it. Something fluid and silvery gray went slithering to the floor where it lay in gleaming folds. Ron gasped. "I've heard of those," he said in a hushed voice, dropping the box of every flavored beans he'd gotten from Hermione. "If that is what I think it is, they're really rare and really valuable." "What is it?" Harry picked up the shining silvery cloth off the floor. It was strange to the touch, like water woven into material. "It's an invisibility cloak," said Ron, a look of awe on his face. "I'm sure it is. Try it on." Harry threw the cloak over his shoulders and Ron gave a yell. "It is! Look down!" Harry looked down at his feet, but they were gone. He dashed to the mirror. Sure enough, his reflection looked back at him, just his head suspended in midair, his body completely invisible. He pulled the cloak over his head and his reflection vanished completely. "There's a note," said Ron suddenly. "A note fell off of it." Harry pulled off the cloak and seized the letter. Written in narrow, looping writing he had never seen before were the following words. "Your father left this in my possession before he died. It is time it was returned to you. Use it well.
A very Merry Christmas to you. There was no signature. Harry stared at the note. Ron was admiring the cloak.
I'd give anything for one of those, he said. Anything. What's the matter?
Nothing, said Harry. He felt very strange. Who had sent the cloak? Had it really once belonged to his father? Before he could say or think anything, the dormitory was flung open, and Fred George Weasley bounded in. Harry stuffed the cloak quickly out of sight. He didn't feel like sharing it with anyone else, just yet.
Merry Christmas! Hey, look, Harry's got a Weasley sweater, too.
Fred and George were wearing blue sweaters, one with a large F on it, the other a G.
Harry's is a lot better than ours, though, said Fred, holding up Harry's sweater. She obviously makes more of an effort if you're not family.
Why aren't you wearing yours, Ron? George demanded. Come on, get it on. They're lovely and warm.
I hate maroon,
Ron moaned half-heartedly as he pulled it over his head.
Yours hasn't got a letter on it, George observed. I suppose she thinks you don't forget your name.
But we're not stupid. We know we're called George and Fred. Oh, what did he say? Greg and Forge? All right, whatever. That's a joke. I didn't get it because I read it too fast. I'm sorry.
What's all this noise? Percy Weasley stuck his head through the door, looking disapprovingly.
He'd clearly gotten halfway through unwrapping his presents, too, as he also carried a lumpy sweater over his arm, which Fred seized.
P for prefect. Come on. Get it on, Percy. We're all wearing ours. Even Harry got one. I don't want,
said Percy thickly, as the twins forced the sweater over his head, knocking his glasses askew.
And you're not sitting with a prefix today, either, said George. Christmas is a time for family.
They frog-marched Percy from his room, arms pinned to his side by his sweater. Harry had never in all his life had such a Christmas dinner. 100 fat roast turkeys, mountains of roast and boiled potatoes, platters of chipolatas? What's that? Yeah. Chipolata. What is it? Oh, C-H-I-P, like chip, O-L-A-T-A. Oh, well. Anyways, there were platters of them, whatever they were.
Tureens of buttered peas, silver boats of thick, rich gravy and cranberry sauce, and stacks of wizard crackers every few feet along the table. These fantastic party flavors were nothing like the feeble muggle ones the Dursleys usually bought, with their little plastic toys and flimsy paper hats inside. Harry pulled a wizard cracker with Fred, and it didn't just bang, it went off with a blast, like a cannon, and engulfed them up in a cloud of blue smoke, while from the inside exploded a rear admiral's hat and several live white mice. Up at the head table, Dumbledore had swapped his pointed wizard's hat for a flowered bonnet and was chuckling merrily at a joke Professor Flitwick had just read him. You know, do you remember, like, a year ago or something like that, J.K. Rowling mentioned that she thought that she meant for Dumbledore to be gay? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, here he's wearing a flowered bonnet. Yep. Anyways. Flaming Christmas puddings followed the turkey. Percy nearly broke his teeth on a silver sickle embedded in his slice. Harry watched Hagrid getting redder and redder on the face as he called for more wine, finally kissing Professor McGonagall on the cheek, who, to Harry's amazement, giggled and blushed. Her top hat lopsided. She must have had quite a bit to drink, too. When Harry finally left the table, he was laden down with a stack of things out of the crackers, including a box of non-explodable luminous balloons, a grow-your-own-warts kit, and his own new wizard chess set. The white mice had disappeared, and Harry had a nasty feeling they were going to end up as Mrs. Norris's Christmas dinner. Harry and the Weasleys had spent an after... Wait, he has a nasty feeling that's the case, even though he's just devoured several different kinds of animal? Harry and the Weasleys... Sorry. Harry and the Weasleys spent a happy afternoon having a furious snowball fight on the grounds. Then, cold, wet, and gasping for breath, they returned to the fire in the Gryffindor common room, where Harry broke in his new chess set by losing spectacularly to Ron. He suspected he wouldn't have lost so badly if Percy hadn't tried to help him so much. After a meal of turkey sandwiches, crumpets, trifle, and Christmas cake, everyone felt too full and sleepy to do much before bed, except sit and watch Percy chase Fred and George all over Gryffindor Tower because they'd stolen his prefect badge. It had been Harry's best Christmas day ever. Yet something had been nagging at the back of his mind all day. Not until he climbed into bed was he free to think about it. The invisibility cloak and whoever had sent it. Ron, full of turkey and cake and nothing mysterious to bother him, fell asleep almost as soon as he'd drawn the curtains of his four-poster bed. Harry leaned over the side of his own bed and pulled the cloak out from under it. His father's, this had been his father's. He let the material flow over his hands, smoother than silk, light as air. Use it well, the note had said. He had to try it now. He slipped out of bed and wrapped the cloak around himself. Looking down his legs, he saw only moonlight and shadows. It was a very funny feeling. Use it well. Suddenly, Harry felt wide awake. The whole of Hogwarts was open to him in this cloak. Excitement flooded through him, and he stood there in the dark and silence. He could go anywhere in this, anywhere, and Filch would never know. Ron grunted in his sleep. Should Harry wake him? Something held him back, his father's cloak. He felt that this time, the first time, he wanted to use it alone. He crept out of the dormitory, down the stairs, across the common room, and climbed through the portrait hole. "Who's there?" squawked the fat lady. Harry said nothing. He walked quickly down the corridor. Where should he go? He stopped, his heart racing, and thought. And then it came to him. The restricted section of the library. He'd be able to read as long as he liked, as long as it took him to find out who Flamel was. He set off, drawing the invisibility cloak tight around him as he walked. The library was pitch and black and very eerie. Harry lit a lamp to see his way along the rows of books. The lamp looked it looked as if it was floating in midair. Even though Harry could feel his arm supporting it, the sight of it gave him creeps. Why didn't he just put it under the robe? Then he wouldn't be able to see it. Anyways. The restricted section was right at the back of the library. Stepping carefully over a rope that separated these books from the rest of the library, he held up the lamp to read the titles. They didn't tell him much. Their peeling, faded gold letters spelled words in languages Harry couldn't understand. Some had no title at all. One book had a dark stain on it that looked horribly like blood. The back of Harry's neck prickled. Maybe he was imagining it, maybe not, but he thought there was a faint whispering was coming from the books, as though they knew there was someone there that shouldn't be. He had to start somewhere. Setting the lamp down carefully on the floor, he looked along the bottom for an interesting-looking book. A large black and silver volume caught his eye. He pulled it out with difficulty because it was very heavy, and, bouncing on its knee, let it fall open. A piercing, blood-curdling shriek split the silence. The book was screaming. Harry snapped it shut. The shriek went on and on, one high, unbroken, ear-splitting note. Harry stumbled backwards and knocked over his lamp, which went out at once. Panicked, he heard footsteps coming down the corridor. Stuffing the shrieking book in the back of the shelf, he ran for it. He passed Filch in the doorway. Filch's pale, wild eyes looked straight through him, and Harry slipped under Filch's outstretched arm and streaked up the corridor, the book's shriek still ringing in his ears. He came to a sudden halt in front of a tall suit of armor. He'd been so getting away from the library, he hadn't paid attention to where he was going. Perhaps because it was so dark, he didn't recognize where he was at all. There was a suit of armor near the kitchens, he knew, but he must be 5 floors above there. "You have asked me to come directly to you, Professor, if anyone wandering around at night, and someone's been to the library restricted section." Harry felt the blood drain from his face. Wherever he was, Filch must know a shortcut, because his soft, greasy voice was getting nearer. And to his horror, it was Snape who replied. "In the restricted section. Well, they can't be far. We'll catch them." Harry stood. Harry? Hang on, I'm going to call you back. So here we go, once again with the reception. To Harry's horror, it was Snape who replied. the restricted section. Well, if they can't be far, then we'll catch them. Harry stood rooted to the spot as Filch and Snape came the corner ahead. They couldn't see him, of course, but it was a narrow corridor, and if they came much nearer, they'd knock right into him. The cloak didn't stop him from being solid. He backed away as quietly as he could. A door stood ajar to his left. It was his only hope. He squeezed through.